Hello, welcome to Series 8 of The Future of Drug Discovery. We speak with startups and industry to build a better connected community. In this series, Murat gives a talk on the most recent advancements in Antiverse's AI-enabled antibody discovery technology. Antiverse was co-founded in 2017 with the goal of engineering the future of drug discovery to change people's lives. Based in Cardiff, Antiverse combines machine learning and phage display techniques to model antibody-antigen interactions. The current version of the platform uses next-generation sequencing and AI to curate diverse antibody candidates for any given target. The technology is being developed to enable the discovery of biologics for difficult-to-drug targets associated with cancer, heart, and lung diseases. This is a great place to learn more about how computational advancements are facilitating the drug discovery process, particularly in the biologics space, outside of what's currently available online.
I would like to tell you a story about AI and drug discovery, and it's a big story to tell, and I would like to share with you our version of it. We will be mostly focusing on biologics, but we'll also briefly touch on small molecules. I expect this presentation to take about 30 minutes. I'll start with AI and drug discovery in biologics, and then talk a little bit about the obstacles that we see right now, and how can we resolve those obstacles to engineer the future of drug discovery. From that point forward, I will give you a couple of examples how we play into that field, and maybe a case study to give you, to hopefully leave you with a little bit more information and a few actionable ideas. So where are we when it comes to AI and drug discovery? First of all, a lot of things is happening on the small molecule side because there's more available data. But if you focus on the biologic side, about 10% of the whole pharma pipeline is now AI derived. It doesn't mean all kind of discovery. There's a lot of optimization, or maybe the target is discovered through AI, but one way or another, about 10% of the current pharma pipeline is considered to be AI-driven. And you see a couple of examples around COVID, mostly in oncology, and maybe one or two in neurology. But how do you think about this space, AI and drug discovery in general? Well, we mostly split it in small molecules and larger molecules. And you see most of the AI companies being on the small molecule side. There are two reasons for it. First, the mathematical rules of protein-protein interaction is better studied than antigen-antibody interactions. And the other advantage of being in the small molecule area is the amount of data, and also how easily you can generate more data, how easily you can run your validation. If you shift your focus to biologics, which might be preferable for a couple of different reasons, specifically being one, then you see companies again either focusing on de novo discovery or optimization. And within the optimization, there are different parts, including maturation, developability, solubility, etc. And when you look at the de novo discovery parts, then there are only a few names there, us being one. And within that sphere, again, you can divide them into two, one of them with pure in silico approaches and the other ones that are using wet lab technologies to marry that technology and build something together. Both have advantages, and I will just move us maybe to the next level where we see the obstacles. First of all, data quantity. When it comes to antibodies, if you look at the PBB files, there are maybe thousands, but not 10,000 or 100,000 VHHs antibodies, and especially the paired ones. The quality, all of the publicly available data is coming from different resources, coming, you know, based on different experiments, different labs, so there are certain deviation, and normalization is not that easy. Then there's access. So some of the big pharma and biotech companies have this type of data generated in the past, but not necessarily true for all of them. And again, it might be completely in a distributed fashion, staying in somebody's hard disk, living in an Excel file somewhere else, and so on. So even if you have a collaboration in place, accessing that data may not be that easy. And then if you decide to go down the path to generate your own data, you can do that. You can run certain experiments that takes a couple of weeks to a couple of months to generate data. And we eventually decided to do that where everything else failed. But it's definitely a barrier to entry to the market. Then there's the speed of generation. So it doesn't matter how much money you have. You will definitely hit certain, it's not going to be a simple, some application of AI in another field where you can just generate data. So the second part, the second biggest problem we see is the validation. And by that, I mean the validation of the predicted molecule, whether you have to synthesize it, express it, purify it, or you have to check whether it binds, has correct characteristics, that takes time. There is no real high throughput method. There are some companies that maybe does monoclonal antibody expression purification, tens or hundreds, but we haven't seen anything that does it on thousands or hundred thousands. And then another one is size of biologics, but it comes with the area. If you think about a small molecule, it might be 200,000, where on the antibodies, 150 kilodalton and so on. And then there's the complexity. I use the word antibody sometimes instead of biologics, but what I mean by that, anything with a heavy chain. We have VHHs, multi-specifics, intrabodies, and so on. So there is a huge amount of complex to be modeled. Now, some of them also fit into the future possibility because we see more and more improvement in this field with writing and DNA cheaper and faster. You see that you can maybe synthesize some molecules even with a desktop machine. Lots of high throughput experimental models being developed both in big pharma but also in academia. New modalities are emerging, so there will be multiple new ways of targeting, not single targets but various targets in combination by using multi-specifics and designing those multi-specifics hopefully going easier. We are hoping that AI will offer some information on designing the best VHHs that can cross the blood-brain barrier. And if you extend it a little bit further, I think what we will see and what we are already seeing an increase in the percentage of AI-driven or AI-native molecules in the biologics pipeline of big pharma. And I think if you stretch that quite far, hopefully we will get to a day where we will have personalized medicine. You see that you can get an FDA approval, not on software and sort of devices, mostly for diagnostics, but I'm hoping for a future where it will happen for a therapeutic as well. So you get an approval on your algorithm rather than each individual asset that you generate for a particular person. Now, we play in that space by mostly focusing on not incremental updates, efficiencies, making optimization faster, affinity maturation faster, that kind of stuff. We would like to do something that wasn't possible without AI before, and that is going after GPCRs and ion channels, challenging targets that have been maybe successfully drugged with small molecules, but not so much with antibodies. There are only two antibodies approved by the FDA against these GPCRs, but there are hundreds of. And they are associated with tons of different diseases. And we believe that this is really a good area to highlight what AI can do. Now, there are two problems when it comes to that, and I'll talk more about it later. So what are we doing? We are using AI, but also we are using a lot of wet lab innovation to generate de novo antibodies against GPCRs. Our mission is to go after cancer, cardiovascular, diabetes, and a few others, all associated with GPCRs. We are a team of 19. So here's a little bit about Antiverse. We are a team of 19. We found the company back in 2017, raised about $5 million, and we generate our own data. So we are data independent, and we use that data to build machine learning models. Then when we point that to a new target, it starts predicting new antibody sequences. Then we turn into, with the help of the MIST, into an antibody library. We get that library screen against the GPCR and hopefully bind down target-specific binders. Hopefully they also have function. Now, we work with about six different companies so far, two of them being pharma. Now, when you go after GPCR, there's a reason why we have only two FDA-approved antibodies against GPCRs as an entire industry, because there are two big problems. One of them, we call this a forest problem, that GPCR, which is a multi-pass transmembrane protein, it is hidden among a forest of other proteins. So when you try to bind an antibody against it, it's very well hidden among many other things. Now, the second problem is an iceberg problem. So this is somewhat of a big protein, a receptor, GPCR, but most of it is intracellular. You have just a tiny bit on the surface. So your effective epitope is very, very limited. We have two solutions to this. One of them is to make sure that we have high expressing cell lines, basically, that have the 1,000 times more GPCRs or ion channels on them that increases your chance of hitting one. This is a inducible cell line that has a maximum number of receptors on day two. Then we do our panning on day three, they die. Then for the second time, we get a fresh batch. The second problem, the iceberg problem, is solved with the help of AI. What we do, we provide the input sequence of targets. And based on that, our model designs a target-specific library. It makes some predictions of how well certain sequences will bind. Then we get those, we select a couple of different backbones, and then we send this for synthesis. We receive the DNA back, put into the plasmid, subclone, put into phage, do the pen. From target sequence, ideally with structure if it's available, to move stable cell line development and target-specific library design. That's the point where we work with Twist. Once we receive the library back in our labs, we do the phage display, either against a usual soluble protein or it's mostly a biopanic with flow cytometer against GPCR. Then we send our results for sequencing so that we can not only do random clonal picking, but an AI-based analysis of the whole population and make some informed decisions about diverse sequences. Once we do that analysis after stage five, we do the expression of those scFvs or FAPs or MAPs, whichever is the preferred choice of structure for the partner. Then we confirm the binding again, and after that, we send them for functional testing. That part we do not do in-house. However, there are a couple of very good companies out there, both in the UK and the US, also in Belgium, that does the CM beta arresting IP1 based assays. And they get the results, and that's what we hand over to our partner. So they come to us with a problem of, we have a GPCR, we cannot find a functional antibody against it, and mostly it's an antagonist. And then after 6 months later, we give them a functional antibody for them to decide whether to license. An example of that work is against the GPCR that we have done recently. We got a library from Twist. We screened that library against this GPCR, and we also use a target-specific library as well. And at the end, we had about 55 binders. We got these 55 binders. If we check them, whether they also bind to the transiently transfected cell and a few other things, just to make sure that there is sufficient specificity. Now, the next thing we do is we screen them both as an agonist and then an antagonist. Bear in mind that these were not designed to be agonist or antagonist. It was a pure screen, so we haven't predicted any function. None of them had an agonistic function, but some of them had antagonistic function, which was really good in this particular case, because there are a few different indications associated with that GPCR. Thrombosis, triple negative breast cancer being two. So we did IC50 determination, and you know, the affinity levels were not that bad either. Now we repeated that data. We also looked for beta arrestin that confirmed antagonism. And then last week we sent some of those antibodies for a platelet aggregation inhibition test, and we got really good, encouraging results for antibodies better than a commercially available antibody, and one of them is even better than a pharmaceutical drug. So we are really happy with the news that these are not just antibodies for tests or for diagnosis, but that you can really turn them into therapeutic antibodies. Of course, still a long road ahead, but I think for a lot of people who judge the quality of a platform based on how far an asset is, we were really happy to hear. We did a lot of improvement to our models. We started actually sequence by prediction, but eventually to improve the accuracy to a point where we can maybe skip the whole library design and panning and get to maybe an accuracy of 1 in 10, 1 in 100, so that you can directly synthesize those antibodies or express purify them and then test them against your target, you need a little bit more to go on with than just sequence. So we develop an in-house antibody structure prediction. It is almost as accurate as AlphaFold, if not better in multiple cases, but there are other tools that seems to be better than AlphaFold as well, like OmegaFold or Antibody Builder, that are more specific to antibody structures. However, what we optimize for is the speed, because machine learning models can deal with a lot of noise, but you need a large volume of data for most of the applications. So that's what we focus on here. The RMSD is usually under 1 angstrom in most of the cases, especially around HCDDR3, you see that increase between 1.5 to 1.5. To enable what we want to do, we had to have a very balanced machine learning and a wet lab team. So on the machine learning side, it is my co-founder, Ben Holland, graduate from Oxford University, did a lot of interesting stuff, being in Rwanda, doing field testing, Malaysia, building a manufacturing pipeline, Japan for business development. But he's a scientist and engineer at heart. So he worked on similar problems for a very long time, and we met in 2017 to create antibodies. Specifically GPCRs and ion channels, when it comes to expertise, Gerzy Hasen is one of the world-known scientists. He spent 20-plus years to develop hundreds of cell lines and did, again, hundreds of experiments against those cell lines with VHAs and SCFEs successfully when he was the CSO at Theranex. We are really lucky to have him as our antibody and discovery director. Then we got our first funding from Deep Science Ventures, a lab-based accelerator. Kirsten Papentos is representing them, and some other investors help us with target selection and with the direction of the company. Then we had Peter Peck, who raised about $120 million in total in different companies. Some of them might already know him from his role at Crescendo Biologics as a chairman first, a CEO later. He did, I think, their last round as well, which is quite high. And we, as we move closer to positioning company as a AI pharma, we need to know more about the indications, how the targets are associated with the indications, and what is the commercial potential, what's the competitive landscape, what are other molecules, both in biologics, but also in small molecules. And to cover that expertise, we brought it David Chow. He changed our all internal targets and pipeline just a few months. So really lucky to have him. It does. I want to thank you all for listening.
So first question that we have is, at what stages does Antiverse implement AI and ML? And do you plan to implement more computational methods throughout your discovery pipeline?
So we use AI ML for two parts. One of them is the library design or the prediction of the sequences, which we will think will bind to the target. And the second time we use AI ML is the selection of the sequences that will be tested. So that's the end of the wet lab experiment. There is definitely a lot of interaction between the wet lab, the ML team, and we see that there is some tooling necessary to make the process more streamlined. And then there's another aspect. So it's not really that black and white when you categorize companies. So these are doing internal discovery and these are doing optimization. I think everybody starts from some point and in other direction. So for us, it just makes sense to go downstream and start predicting affinity, developability, and so on.
Another question we have is, where do you get your data to do the ML training on?
We initially got it from PDB and OAS, Observable Antibody Space, and NFA patents. After that, we started to work with partners, and then they provided some of the data. But I would say the majority of data we had to create. We got off-the-shelf targets. We purchased some antibody libraries, and also we designed some. Then we screened those libraries against the targets, did the NGS, put into a database, and that's the bulk of what we do.
What are the sizes of your computationally designed libraries?
It's a good question. The shortest answer is about a few hundred million was the first one we designed. And then the second one we designed was about 300 times smaller than that. So the limitation is actually a partner's ability to be incorporate that much diversity in the synthesis system. So usually you can only synthesize so many different regions, HCDR2 regions, and recombine them later on.
Do you use a fixed framework, or do you vary your frameworks within the library?
I think varying the frameworks is a good idea, but it's not very quick, or it's definitely that's what we have done originally, but then we set one a couple of different frameworks where we could just maybe get the HCDR3 synthesized and drop in subcloning to speed up the whole process. And if you look at the VLC especially, there's a lot you can do there to reduce the diversity and focus more.
Another question that followed up with this is that, is there a relationship between the best framework and the specific GPCR?
This is not something we have studied. I think probably that needs to be answered experimentally, because most of the data we have generated is not coming from out of GPCRs. One would be able to say that, but I would maybe expect that to be so.
And do you benchmark against AlphaFold, and do you work with creating VHH libraries?
So that part is, in terms of the antibody structure prediction, yes. In terms of the binding accuracy, like how many sequences you need to generate to find a binder, that's not necessarily covered by AlphaFold. And so I say we work with antibodies, but we work with anything with a heavy chain. And VHH is obviously a favorable for a lot of different reasons, one of them being its small size. And also there are a lot of available data sources.
What kind of ML model do you use for CDR generation?
It is actually an ensemble of different models. So we experimented variable autoencoders, GANs, graph neural networks. So pretty much all of them.
Another question came in. Could you elaborate a bit on your phage display biopanning strategies?
Sure. It is, I mean, there's a lot of know-how there, but on a very high level, it's not much different than the phage display biopanning strategies you would get somewhere else. You usually start with a cell line. If you have something to deselect against, then you do your deselection, and then you do a couple of more rounds. If there's cross-reactivity in play, then you will try to also search for cross-reactivity too. It usually takes about 2 weeks, maybe less than that, to do 3 rounds of panning. And at the end of each round of panning, you would usually look for diversity to know when to stop, whether to go a little more or not. I mean, we do certain things to maybe keep the diversity as high as possible, which is a little bit unnatural compared to traditional way of random patients.
How do you choose which to test from the first round, and how many do you test from the first round?
Completely a budget issue than anything else, right? If you are testing MABs and you start with SCFPs, for example, conversion to MABs, 96 at a panel will set you back about 60K. So it depends how much money and time you have.
That's always the situation. So, and then some other questions that we have is, you know, after clustering, how do you select which antibodies to test? So I guess that kind of follows the question that we asked before.
After clustering, yes. So we usually kind of not only a binding prediction, like binary, but there's a binding score that we can use. Also, I mean, there are things that you look for, the number of counts and the number of other sequences, the counts of similar sequences to that particular representative sequence and so on. You also look for, can look for, you don't have to, the enrichment profile, like how many times that sequences were there in the previous runs and how did it evolve over time. And there are other things.
I see. A question came in to ask if you are able to elaborate on what kind of collaboration models that Antiverse has.
Usually we go after very difficult targets with Big Pharma, and it's usually a target that they work on it and they didn't get the result they were looking for. So for that kind of breakthrough antibodies, we usually get milestones and royalties for that risk revenue share. For other times, doesn't matter how many case studies we have internally, a pharmaceutical partner or biotech partner might be asking for, you know, they want to based on their test project. So there were a couple of exceptional cases where we run IP for service POC project. And when it comes to academic partnerships, I mean, we built this company to bring as many drugs as patients possible. So we are quite flexible in the way how we run the company.
And maybe we'll end with this last comment and question. Antiverse, anything specific to the name of your company?
So the founder of the name is actually a very good colleague of ours. He has his own company and he's part of the DSV cohort. He came up with an idea of antibody and universe and combined it as an antiverse to pick the right antibody from the universe of antibodies. And most of the slide deck, you see, you know, these dots around or the design of galaxies, like antibody galaxies. So we play with that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Future of Drug Discovery podcast, brought to you by Murat, the CEO and co-founder of Antiverse, and the production team here at Antiverse. To help us achieve our mission of a better connected community, we'd really appreciate if you could like, rate, and leave a review of the podcast. Found this episode particularly interesting? Be sure to share it with your network to see if your colleagues, collaborators, and friends may share this same interest. Until next time.